Hello, I'm Sue Crawley. This is number 0197, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0197. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet actress Gabrielle Stone, star of the new horror film, Speak No Evil.
It's a horror film. It deals with demonically possessed children, which I know there's a lot of the possession films coming out right now, but this one is very plot-driven and very character-driven, so it's definitely got an artsy feel to it. It's not like every other horror film. It's very artsy, and it's got like a really good story to it, which I think sometimes in horror films we don't find when everyone's just getting slashed and chopped to pieces.
Anna Warasena is the author of The Essential Guide to Effective In-Flight Flirting.
When it comes to strutting down the aisle, you have to look really confident and dress well. And when you're traveling, you want to be comfortable. But make an effort to look good, smell good, and strut the aisle like you would a fashion runway. Because you have about 5 seconds to get somebody's attention while you're walking from the toilet to the seat or from the seat to the toilet.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter pays a trip to Cooperstown with Inside the Baseball Hall of Fame, another uniquely Hall of Fame suggestion. So don't wait for the seventh inning stretch. It's coming up soon on the Stuff File Program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0197, was Sue Crowley, who is the traffic coordinator for Astral Media in the BC Interior. And somebody I used to work with, oh, so many years ago, at a radio station here in Montreal. Thank you very, very much, Sue, for doing the guests late on this edition of the Stuff File Program. Very much appreciated. The Stuff File Program is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, by the way, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, here's a quote from a police spokeswoman in Romania. He's likely to have a lot more time inside jail to consider things. Given his nervous disposition, he probably should look for another job. The spokeswoman was talking about Marius Ionescu, who is 31, who was allegedly robbing a house when he heard a noise. He hid under a bed and called police to report that someone had broken into the house he was stealing from. When officers arrived, they discovered that no, he was the only person in the house. The noise he heard was the family's cat. Ionescu was arrested. Yeah, sounds like he does need a new line of work because he has nerves of jello. Benjamin Kohler, age 26, was serving jury duty in Salem, Oregon, and the jury was being shown a video of the arresting officer interviewing the defendant. The lights were dimmed, and Marion County Circuit Court Judge Dennis Graves noticed a strange glow illuminating Kohler. Now, the judge stopped the video, called a recess, and excused the jury except for Kohler, who was apparently texting a friend on his cell phone. The judge, who had told the jurors that they could not use their cell phones during court, held Kohler in contempt and sentenced him to 2 days in prison. Here's a quote from Kohler. I know what I did wasn't smart, and I don't blame the judge for being upset, but 2 days in jail is harsh. Yeah. Sure it is. Text that to a friend, you moron. And Don Kastner's t-shirt said, "Jail sucks." Now he's got a chance to learn just what that means. Now, the day officers reeled in dozens of suspects in Operation Meal Ticket targeting misuse of food stamps, Kastner was picked up in the all-too-appropriate garment and sent to the Manatee County, Florida jail. Kastner, who is 39, is accused of selling electronic benefit transfer cards, which authorities consider welfare fraud. The ominous part for him, they don't consider the shirt false advertising for the jail. Well, it did say, jail sucks. Lucky for him it didn't say jail blows. Moving right along, convicted murderer Daniel Heiss escaped from the Berrima jail in Darwin, Australia in 1995. He was caught 12 days later after a massive manhunt. His girlfriend has now published his biography and says Heiss escaped after studying the key hanging from a jailer's belt and making a copy. Nonsense, says a now-retired jailer from the prison, who has asked to remain anonymous. It was much, much easier than that, he said. Every prisoner who was brought in, he says, was given a copy of the Prisoner's Information Handbook. Its cover illustration was a set of crossed keys displaying a perfect copy of the prison's master key, he says. And it wasn't Heiss who had made the copy, but rather another prisoner who was a jeweler who was allowed to have jewelry-making tools in his cell. After the escape, the jailer said the handbooks were taken off the prisoner straight away, and the contractors were called to change all of the locks. Okay, shouldn't that have been an unpaid job for the person who decided to put the key image on the handbook in the first place? And whose idea was it to give a jeweler who is in jail instruments of his job, which can obviously be transferred to making keys? But I digress. Moving right along, still on the subject of keys, a cop noticed a small child jumping around in a van, so he pulled the vehicle over. He looked inside and discovered the van was full of Frito-Lay snacks, hundreds of bags of them. There were potato chips and Cheetos and pork rinds all over the van, said a Marion County, Florida sheriff's spokesperson. The driver, Darren Hagerman, age 25, allegedly had a master key that fit the gate of a nearby Frito-Lay plant. Authorities say Hagerman admitted that he and his sister, Jessica Huggard, age 22, had snatched the snacks from a dumpster to sell them. The toddler went to a relative, and Hagerman and Huggard, facing charges of burglary and grand theft, went off to jail. Frito-Lay workers said they chased Hagerman repeatedly over the years. Okay, who knew the Frito Bandito, whose name was Hagerman? That's point number one. And you know what they say about Lay's potato chips? Bet you can't steal just one. But seriously, he took those snacks from a dumpster? Why are they throwing these things out? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Danielle Parker was hospitalized and awaiting DUI charges after a crash near Gaston, North Carolina in March, even though she had been in the passenger seat of the car. Now, she had handled the steering wheel momentarily because Brittany Reinhardt, age 19, who was in the driver's seat, was busy texting. Reinhardt, who was apparently sober at the time, was charged with aiding and abetting a DUI. Seriously, is this what our society has come to now? Really? A drunk steering the car for someone who is sitting in the driver's seat texting? Yeah. First sign of the apocalypse. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Actress Gabrielle Stone has followed the same career path that her parents did. Her dad was the late Christopher Stone, and her mom is the queen of fear films. That would be Dee Wallace. Gabrielle is the star of a new film called Speak No Evil, which is coming out this summer. And Gabrielle joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Gabrielle.
Hello. Hello, Canada. How are you guys?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. I introduced you by mentioning your mom as being the queen of fear films, and you seem to be certainly following in her footsteps with this movie, Speak No Evil.
Yeah, you know, everybody's kind of seen the similarities between us, I included. It's kind of freaky how some of our screams and crying stuff on screen kind of are exactly the same. But yeah, I mean, it's great. I love the horror genre. It's been a ton of fun. So it's definitely a good place to be at right now.
Is acting something you always wanted to do? I mean, you know, thinking of your family background, was there ever a thought that you wouldn't do this?
You know, I grew up as a dancer, and I loved to write, but I always in the back of my head thought that I was going to be an actress, but I never really knew that I wanted to do it until I did my first film, and I realized, like, that there was nothing else that I ever wanted to be doing.
So tell us about this new film, Speak No Evil.
Speak No Evil it's a horror film. It deals with demonically possessed children. Which I know there's a lot of the possession films coming out right now, but this one is very plot-driven and very character-driven, so it definitely got an artsy feel to it. It's not like every other horror film. It's very, very artsy, and it's got like a really good story to it, which I think sometimes in horror films we don't find when everyone's just getting slashed and chopped to pieces.
And I understand you play a single mom in this movie?
I do, and that was new for me because I'm 24, but in the film I'm supposed to be 27, 28, and my daughter is older, so it was implied that I had her young, at 15, 16 years old. So that was a new challenge for me, getting to dig my teeth into playing a mother, but it was awesome. I really enjoyed it, actually.
What do you look for when you look for a role?
Anything that really is different. I like finding stuff that I haven't seen before, and I like finding stuff that gets me excited when I read it. And now if it gets me excited when I'm reading it and possibly wanting to do it, then it's going to get people excited when they watch it, when it's finished.
Growing up in a family that consisted of actors, sometimes you kind of take it for granted because you grow up knowing what you know and you don't think about it much, but now that you're here in this situation as an actress, do little things that your parents used to do suddenly, not necessarily make sense, but come to you by osmosis because you figure, oh, okay, I see where this is going, or I see how this is done, or I see the method involved in preparing for this role or that role?
You know, when my parents, growing up with them, when they were on set and stuff, I was really lucky. I got to be on set with them a lot, and if either of them were ever gone for more than a week, I went with them. So I really grew up on a lot of different sets, and I really, as a little girl, watched a lot of what was going on, so really, it helped me feel at home when I went on the set. It was kind of like a home away from home. It wasn't something new that I had to learn how to be comfortable, which is a huge thing, being comfortable when you're diving into a new role. But yeah, I can totally see how things that my parents did when back in the day, I was like, okay, that's a little weird. Now I was like, oh, okay, I totally know what they were doing.
Now, do I understand that you also want to direct?
Maybe in the future, yes, I would be totally open to that. My mom always tells me, she knows that I'm going to produce and direct one day. I do write. I have a screenplay that's being looked at by some investors right now. So that's something that really I'm passionate about, is writing my own stuff that I can then bring to life and be in as well. But yeah, I think down the line I would definitely be interested in doing something like that.
Is it an entirely different creative muscle for you to want to write and create characters as opposed to acting? And is one more of a passion to you than the other?
I'm definitely most passionate about what I'm doing right now is being an actress. I think it's an amazing art to be able to be someone that you're not and create these characters that you would never normally have in your life. And I think it's really a form of therapy, but, that's my main passion, definitely. But writing has always been something that I've been interested in my entire life. So if you're so passionate about one thing and the other one goes hand in hand, why not write stuff that you can then bring to life and do your other passion with,
Your character in Speak No Evil, Anna, the single mom we were talking about, it is a lead role. Was there a lot of pressure involved in being the lead role in a movie like this for you?
There was. I was in almost every scene in the film, so it was a lot of work. We shot in 16 days, so doing a feature in that amount of time is insanely, that's a pressure right there as it is. But every other part that I've had so far, even when I've been one of the leads, I've been one of the leads. So, me and a couple other people, or me and one other person, but this was the first time where it was really just all about my character. So, yeah, I definitely felt a lot of pressure. I'm looking forward and a little nervous to see the whole thing as a whole, but it was awesome. It was really a good challenge for me to be able to take on a lead role in also a role that I've never done as a mother and be able to challenge myself and overcome that. So it was great.
As we mentioned, it's a horror film. We mentioned your mom already, Dee Wallace. Has she seen it? And Does she have an opinion of her daughter literally following in her footsteps?
She has not seen it yet. I've only seen snippets and like rush cuts of it. So tomorrow is the actual world premiere when I'll see it. And then next week is the LA premiere. And that's when my mom will be seeing it with me. But she's super supportive in anything I want to do. And so the fact that it was, you know, as you say, following in her footsteps, that just made it even more awesome for her. But she's great. She's the most supportive and caring mother I could ever ask for. So she's also very honest. So if I ever stuck in anything, she definitely lets me know. But she's looking forward to seeing the film just as much as I am.
Okay, so what are you more nervous about, seeing it in a theater with an entire audience, you know, this big film of yours, or seeing it in the theater sitting next to your mom?
You know, that's a good question. It probably goes hand in hand, but it's definitely a little nerve-wracking seeing a big piece of work that, you know, has gotten so much buzz and hype around it, and seeing it for the first time with 250 other people. But also, you know, my mom, I'm not really nervous about seeing it with her. I'm more excited for her to see it because I know she's going to be proud of me, and I know the work that I did in it was very strong, and my mom was my teacher for 3 years, so I know she's going to be really proud when she sees it.
Have you ever acted with your mom?
I have, actually. We did a little film called Beyond about 2 years ago, and we had some scenes together in that, but we're also both scheduled to do a film in September together called Elephant's Graveyard, and it's also starring Billy Zane. But that one we don't have too many scenes together. I think there's one actually that we have that we cross paths in the film, but I play her son's girlfriend in it, so that'll be fun.
Has your mother ever discussed the possibility, saying, you know, look, Gabrielle, you're an actress, but you're also a writer. How about you write a couple of characters for the two of us?
You know, we have mixed feelings about that. We love working together because we're so close, and we're mother, daughter, and best friends. But at the same time, we don't want my career path to be, you know, everything to do with her. We want, you know, both of us, I and her, and herself, want me to have my own stuff going on and my own work to do. So, we enjoy working together and we love it. And the film that I just wrote that's being looked at by investors, that has a part that I wrote with her in mind that she would love to do. So that might be something in the future that we can look forward to.
You have Elephant's Graveyard coming up, as you mentioned, with Billy Zane. Any other projects in the works besides the movie you just described that you've written and you hope to get made?
Yeah, I'm actually coming back to Arizona in the beginning of June to shoot the feature film called Grief, directed by Kevin Phipps. And it's a really gritty indie film, but it's a psychological drama that I'm really excited about, actually, that I think is going to do really well at a lot of the festivals and stuff.
Excellent. So you're keeping very, very busy these days.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying, but especially this summer, it literally seems like we're going from place to place to place. The Speak No Evil tour has kind of taken over my life between all the premieres and all the Comic-Cons. Or I feel like I'm on a plane every other day, but it's good. Busy's good.
Well, the movie is called Speak No Evil. People can find it coming out this summer. People can also check your website, which is actressgabriellestone.com. And they can find you on Twitter as well, too.
Yes, I love having all the fans and friends keeping in touch with me on Twitter and Facebook, so that's fabulous.
Excellent. Gabrielle, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Of course, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Actress Gabrielle Stone. Her new movie is Speak No Evil, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0197, and you'll find links to Gabrielle's site. And time for a full disclosure. Like so many people, I am a big fan of Gabrielle's mom, Dee Wallace, and she's been on the air with me a couple of times now. But I also have to say a word about Gabrielle's father, the late actor Christopher Stone. Now, I grew up watching a lot of the shows that he appeared on in the 70s and 80s, and I always found him to be such a versatile actor. One of my favorite roles was when he played Dr. Pooch Harden in the TV series The Interns back in 1971. They don't make characters like Pooch Harden anymore, by the way. They don't even name characters like Pooch Harden anymore. Anyway, he was capable of doing it all, from playing the hero to the villain and everything in between. He was taken from us and this world way too soon. And if you look at the talents of Christopher Stone and Dee Wallace, then you can't deny the pedigree of Gabrielle Stone. She is definitely someone to keep an eye out for on the screen. Again, her movie is Speak No Evil, and it's out this summer.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about in-flight flirting, say that fast five times, and also Stuart Nallman with another edition of Book Banter. Plus, there is, of course, an Idiot of the Day and lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smart Way to listen to radio. Sheriff's deputies in Shasta County, California say a long-standing feud between two men is the result of a love triangle with an unidentified woman. They say Jonathan Sartor, age 30, was walking to work when Joseph Riviera, age 36, drove by and saw him. They exchanged words, and then investigators say Riviera made a U-turn and attempted to run Sartor down. Sartor fought back with what he had in hand, an apple, which he threw, hitting Riviera's side window. Riviera jumped out of his truck, and with a baseball bat, he hit Sartor, who wrestled the bat away and bashed Riviera back. By the time authorities arrived, Riviera was unconscious on the ground with a major head injury, and Sartor was found walking nearby with his own head injury. Both men live in Happy Valley. Wow, doesn't sound like a very happy place, does it? And that woman, whoever she is, she must be really something special. Yeah. Anyway, Kristen Whitson of the Ocala, Florida Police Department found a 17-year-old girl sitting outside with her head in her hands, bleeding. Witnesses told Whitson that they had seen another teenage girl, apparently armed with a knife, chase the unarmed victim, and that the apparent assailant was the victim's twin. Now, the victim accused her sister of stabbing her in the head, hand, back, and breast with a fork, not a knife. And the fork wasn't the first weapon used. That was the plate her sister threw at her, she said. The victim said her sister was displeased with her for eating the ranch dressing. The victim went to a hospital and her sister to juvenile detention, where reports indicate she remained violent. Well, if the court spoons out some justice, the place setting will be complete. Now, isn't it ironic that two people who once shared a womb can't share ranch dressing? I'm guessing they won't be exchanging birthday presents. Yeah. Police in Charlotte, North Carolina said a woman called authorities and had her juvenile son arrested for stealing her Pop-Tarts. Charlotte Mecklenburg police said officers responded to the woman's home, and she reported her juvenile son had stolen her breakfast pastries. The police report said the boy was placed under juvenile arrest on a charge of larceny misdemeanor. When local television station WCNC went to her house, the woman, whose name was not reported, refused to comment, choosing to instead shout out an obscenity and slam the door. Sounds like a classy family filled with nothing but love, but not so much on fruit filling. Yeah. And here's another quote for you. It's alleged he walked behind the counter and tried to push the two workers aside before attempting to open the cash register. That's what Police Inspector Paul Thornton said after an attempted robbery of a chicken shop in Rosebery, New South Wales, Australia. Two women were working in the shop. One ran to call police, and the other responded with a bucket of chili flakes over his face, Thornton said, which apparently floored him. Police were pretty sure that Tyrone Holmwood, age 24, was their man. He had burns all over his face. Said Holmwood's solicitor in court, Tyrone, now that he is sober, don't you love that qualifier? Yeah. Tyrone, now that he is sober, is shocked at the allegations. However, Holmwood's father thought the women did a good job of fighting off his son, even if they didn't go far enough. They poured hot chili on his head. Good for them, he said. I would have poured hot fat on his head instead. Yeah, that wouldn't have worked, Pops. Your son is obviously already a fat head. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Officer German Bosk was fired from the Opa-locka, Florida police because he used a civilian to bring in his assault rifle when he was ordered to surrender it. That's the least I've ever been fired for, he said. And he's trying to get his job back again. You know, saying that that's the least you've ever been fired for, which frankly sounds like bragging, is a hint that this situation indeed is the least of your problems. I mean, let's go through the list, shall we? In 1993, he was rehired with then-Mayor Robert Ingram's help after a new police chief learned he had, among other things, impersonated a cop and been kicked out of the Miami-Dade Police Academy. He had been rehired twice after improperly handling evidence, including crack pipes and possible cocaine, which was found in his car. He was rehired after another officer saw him beating a 16-year-old he was calling trash. And in all, he's been fired and rehired after appeals at least 6 times. And that's saying nothing of his various suspensions. I am the law, he told the teenager. Yeah, it's long past time to prove him wrong. What I want to know is, how hard up is this police department if they keep scraping the bottom of the barrel to reinstate this guy? That's what I want to know. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Anna Warasena has been called the Diva of the Sky. She is the author of The Essential Guide to Effective In-Flight Flirting. Anna's tips, do's and don'ts, and strategies help single flyers make their ultimate connection. And Anna joins us on the line right now. Hi, Anna.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. Flirting in the skies, it's not something you hear a lot about these days. It seems like it could go either really well or really bad. There's not a lot of middle ground. Am I wrong?
I think you are. because now, women and men tend to fly a lot. And the only way they could date is on a flight because the schedules are so tight. If they don't, it's very difficult to fly, very difficult to date. So it's really, really, it's good to date in flight.
So how long have you been doing this? How long have you been the Diva of the Skies?
Well, I don't know about me being the Diva of the Skies, but I've been flying since I've been 5 years old. And my career has taken me into a lot of flying, and I've found that I'm unable to meet any guys or date normally. So I decided that, okay, I'm going to mix my career and my flying and start trying to find Mr. Right on the flight.
Okay, so I mentioned in the introduction you have tips, do's, and don'ts. So what are the do's, and more importantly, what are the don'ts in flirting, you know, at 30,000 feet?
Yes, well, the do's are the aisle. When it comes to strutting down the aisle, you have to look really confident and dress well. And I know when you're traveling, you want to be comfortable, but make an effort to look good, smell good, and strut the runway, strut the aisle like you would a fashion runway. Because you have about 5 seconds to get somebody's attention while you're walking from the toilet to the seat or from the seat to the toilet.
Okay.
Also, you can use turbulence for your advantage. You can kind of bump onto the Mr. or Miss Right and blame it on turbulence. You can also use in-flight yoga, where you can do exercising and yoga on the flight and make some moves so that Mr. Right joins you or he's attracted to what you're doing. The don't from the flight is don't force yourself on anyone, you know. Always keep your boundaries and always make sure that you respect other passengers. Don't talk too much. And if your Mr. Right or Miss Right wants to go to sleep, respect that. Don't litter around your seat. Nobody likes to sit with a messy passenger. So those are a couple of the don'ts and the do's.
Okay, now, you talk about strutting down the aisle like it's a runway. I'm just, like a fashion runway. I'm just wondering, what if, you know, the gods are all on your side and you think Mr. or Ms. Right is actually sitting beside you? What do you do in that situation? Because, you know, it can be pretty awkward if you make a first move and you're rejected and you've got to spend the rest of the flight sitting next to that person.
Well, firstly, you've got to observe. You've got to make sure that he doesn't have a wedding ring. Is he communicating with a girlfriend or a wife? Or is he flying with one of them? And is he on the phone with one of them? Always observe. Play a little hard to get till you kind of get the feeling whether he's interested or not. And also you can kind of break ties by saying, oh, the plane is about to take off. I'm a little scared. Can you hold my hand? Kind of like use humor and build up a friendship and see how it goes. Don't just jump onto his lap straight away. Always test the waters first.
Okay, so you've given us several ideas of how to flirt while in flight, but the ideas you've given to us have been primarily from a female's point of view. What if you're the guy? What are the tips for a guy? What can he do to attract the woman he might be interested in on the flight?
Well, for guys, it's so much easier because guys are expected to make the first move. And if Miss Wright is trying to put her luggage up, run over to her, help her, and it's always easier for a guy to make conversation with a girl. Buy her a drink. You offer her a drink. Make a rise in cabin. Get the stewardesses to be your allies. Pass love letters. You know, give a stewardess a small love letter to pass to your Miss Right, saying, hey, I miss you across the aisle. Something like that. For a guy, it's so much easier.
Now, you've been flying a lot, as you say, and you have this book, The Essential Guide to Effective In-Flight Flirting. There are a lot of people who, of course, fly for a living each and every day, the flight crew. Have you spoken to people who work on airlines, and are they aware of your book? And if so, what do they think?
They're not quite aware of my book because it came out only in 2012. It's relatively new, and I'm just now promoting it. But this is more for passengers who are flying them. Of course, flight crew can use it, but it's more for passengers who want to attract Mr. or Ms. Wright. Of course, the crew can make use of this kind of thing, but they're expected to be kind of more professional and, you know, it might be a bit difficult for the crew to do this, but it doesn't stop them from doing it.
Is there a different strategy when it comes to in-flight flirting as far as duration is concerned? In other words, do you work differently, faster, slower when you're on a short-haul flight as opposed to a long-haul flight?
Yes, if you're flying from New York to Boston, you've got to start flirting really quickly because it's around 30-minute flight, if not less. And you can't, you have to reduce the time of each stage. So you've got to observe faster, you've got to build that connection faster so that you will be able to capture a Mr. or Ms. Wright's heart before you land. In a longer flight, it's so much easier because you have more time to get to know his friends, observe, see what movies he's watching, what music he's listening, share technology on the flight, share a drink, maybe give him a neck massage. you know, it could build up from a friendship to a much greater association on a longer flight. A quick flight, you have to be very quick about it. But the only problem in a longer flight is that if you get an inside stalker, you're going to have a big problem trying to put him off for the rest of the flight. Mm. So you have to be careful and you have to watch boundaries and make sure that you don't get into anybody else's space and be a problem.
Now, security is so tight on flights these days, and as a result, lines are so much longer. Is that an advantage? And by that, I mean, does in-flight flirting actually start at the gate on the ground before you get onto the plane? Is that a good idea or not?
Yes, it starts from the time you get into the airport till the time you land at your destination. Lines are great because you can see whether your Mr. or Ms. Wright is on the line, in line to get tickets, in line to do the security check, and you can always strike up a conversation. And in my book, I have something called the terminal illness, where, you know, when you get to the terminal, you kind of see who is there and you can strike up a conversation and see whether they're taking a flight. And if they're not taking your same flight, you can always exchange numbers.
The book is called The Essential Guide to Effective In-Flight Flirting. Anna, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program. Happy flying.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Goodbye.
Anna Warasinha, who is the author of The Essential Guide to Effective In-Flight Flirting. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In basketball, a player who commits too many fouls is ejected from the game. In our court system, a person who files too many frivolous lawsuits can be ejected from the courts, too. There's a legal name for a person who files too many frivolous lawsuits. They're called a vexatious litigant. Courts don't do this often, but a woman in Idaho has filed so many frivolous lawsuits, she's officially been named a vexatious litigant by 3 states, 2 federal circuit courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court. The courts have told her she can't file any more lawsuits without special permission from a judge. So, what did she do next? She actually sued the last judge who told her she couldn't file any more lawsuits. Let's be fair, taking away anyone's right to sue should be done only as a last resort. Yet, because frivolous lawsuits tie up courts and delay justice for others, judges shouldn't hesitate to penalize people when they continuously abuse the courts. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman.
Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, it is time for Stuart Nullman. And here he is. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter. I like the deep senatorial voice that you used to introduce me, which is appropriate for this edition of Book Banter, because we're going to go through some hallowed halls.
Ah.
Halls of Fame, to be exact.
Okay.
Well, a Hall of Fame.
Any particular sport you were talking about here?
Well, our favorite, baseball, Peter.
Ah, yes.
Because since it officially opened its doors in the upstate New York village of Cooperstown on June 12, 1939, the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum has attracted over 15 million visitors who share their passion of the game of baseball and how much its greatest moments and players have meant to them. As
buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
You don't care if you ever get back.
No. Oh, no. Let's root. Root for the home team. Sorry.
I know, it just sort of hits you. I don't blame you if you belt Take Me Out of the Ball Game.
Especially since we live in a city that doesn't have a home team, but I digress.
Yes, I know, but you have your own home team, nevertheless, do you?
Yes, I do. The Boston Red Sox.
Oh, yeah, good old Bo Sox.
Yes.
But the Hall of Fame, you know, has over 40,000 artifacts, 14,000 hours recorded media, 500,000 photos, and 3 million pieces of documentation as part of its massive collection. Yet only about 15% of that collection is publicly displayed in its 50,000 square foot facility. So if you're a baseball fan, I've made the pilgrimage to Cooperstown. I have three times to visit the Hall of Fame. I have never visited it or plan to visit it in the future. Then Inside the Baseball Hall of Fame is a book that should be an integral part of your baseball library. The book is practically like a catalog of baseball history, as seen through 200 selected items from the Baseball Hall of Fame's impressive collection. It's a cross-section of the ancient, contemporary, and rare baseball artifacts they possess. Caps, uniforms, balls, bats, gloves, jerseys, shoes, trophies, photos, memorabilia, and documentation. Of course, there are some of the obvious items that are identified with the Hall of Fame that are written in the book, such as the famed Doubleday Baseball, alleged to be the very first baseball ever used when the sport was, quote-unquote, invented by Abner Doubleday in 1839. The group photo of some of the Hall's first inductees at the opening and the first induction ceremony in Cooperstown in 1939. The famous 1942 green light letter from U.S. President Franklin Roosevelt to then-baseball commissioner Keenan Mountain Landis, urging him to continue the pro-baseball schedule despite World War II in order to boost morale of the American people on the home front. And however, it's the items that are wisely chosen to appear in this book that help make the history of the game and its legendary players come to life.
Well, tell me, if you go into the Hall of Fame, because you've been there three times.
Yes.
What was the most recent time you've been there?
That was 2009.
2009. So can you find Mark McGwire's syringe?
I think that's still buried deep in the storerooms and the archives of Cooperstown.
I thought you were going to say deep in the tuchus of Mark McGwire.
Well, probably was their duty. I don't think the archivists were. If that was the case, I don't think they were very. How can I say? Would have relished that job.
Okay. Yes.
You know what I mean. But those artifacts I was mentioning, it ranges from the historical to the downright curious. You know, Mark McGwire syringe notwithstanding. I mean, there are such artifacts that are featured in the book, including Roy Hobbs's Wonder Boy bat and trombone case from the 1984 movie The Natural, a uniform from the Baraboo, Wisconsin baseball club dating back to the mid 1860s. Because that is the oldest existing uniform in the Hall of Fame's collection. A space helmet that was worn by the member of the Astrodome's ground crew around 1965.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Bill Lee.
No.
Okay.
That's one of the ones that unfortunately didn't make it.
Okay.
To the collection. And one of the most unusual examples of a pro baseball uniform, the short pants ensemble that the Chicago White Sox wore for only two games during the 1976 season.
And then they realized that when they slid into the base, they left a lot of skin out on the field.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I bet you they must use a lot of you know, cream and solar cane for that one.
Mercurochrome.
Oh, yes. And Bactine. Yes, a lot of Bactine.
A lot of Bactine.
Yes. But the items are beautifully and carefully photographed to show them in their on the field, well worth, you know, well-worn glory, and are accompanied with lengthy single-paragraph descriptions that concisely and thoroughly tell the story behind each item and the respective significance towards its contribution to baseball history. So Inside the Baseball Hall of Fame is a wonderful book that baseball fans will enjoy throughout this season and the off-season, too. In fact, it's almost like the next best thing to making that worthwhile trip to Cooperstown.
Sounds like fun. Now, dare I ask, because I know there are thousands of them, but can you suggest other baseball books or other books of this type?
Well, what I thought about, I was thinking about this before we went on the air, and I figured here's something that's uniquely Baseball Hall of Fame, and I suggest, if you go to the Baseball Hall of Fame, their yearbooks that they publish every year are terrific. Not one volume is the same. I mean, the cover features that year's inductees, and what they do is they do mini biographies of each Baseball Hall of Fame inductee. But the layout and the way it's presented every year, it's different. So it gives a history of the Hall of Fame, you know, the induction rules, the, you know, who are the induction committee, and all the inductees, you know, from the first inductees up until the present. And like I said, each one is different. So for all three visits that I went to, I have an edition of the Hall of Fame yearbook. And you can buy them online, too, through the Hall of Fame's website, baseballhalloffame.org. And you get this year's edition, plus I think some previous editions as well, ranging in price between $10 and $12. So it's a beautiful publication that the Hall of Fame puts out.
Cool. So one more question. So they don't have Mark McGwire's syringe.
Yes.
If you go there, can you find Pete Rose's conscience?
No, I don't think that's even in the archives itself. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay. The book is called?
It's called Inside the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's an official publication of the National Baseball Hall of Fame Museum with a foreword by Brooks Robinson, himself an inductee, published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $40.
And besides finding you as a bleacher creature, where else can people find you, Stuart?
Well, you probably find me at Wrigley Field, but if not, you could find me in the West End Times every week, in print, or online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
Well, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play.
Swing! Bada, 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 swing! Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
We're just about out of racetrack here on this edition of the Stuff File program. Oh, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. That's coming up in just a matter of moments, but I've got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you on this program, which you may have heard is also available on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. I think that's been said once or twice in this very show. Now, while I did go to my share of wild parties when I was in college, I did so quite sober, and therefore I never woke up in strange rooms, at least rooms that I wasn't aware I had been in the first place. And I certainly never had to be saved by search and rescue like the woman in this next story. If there's one thing you want to do when taking hallucinogenic mushrooms, it is make sure that you are in a safe environment. Hiking in the mountains of Colorado is not a safe environment, especially, by the way, if you're naked. Oh, she didn't start out this way. The 21-year-old college student, Taylor Powers, started out on her adventure when she was fully clothed. But somehow, in between starting her hike with two classmates and the 911 call to the Boulder County Sheriff's Office, stripping down to nothing seemed like a good idea. The call that a naked female hiker was high on mushrooms and in distress brought out no less than 35 deputies and assorted rescue personnel. Wow. That's how you get such a big response, by just saying there's a naked woman out there? That's something to remember. Yeah. When they found her, she was being restrained by her two male companions. It is unclear whether restrained is a euphemism or not. Rescuers had to handcuff the unruly Powers, who struggled as she was placed in a rescue basket. She was cited for unlawful consumption of a controlled substance. You know, years from now, she'll tell her story to her grandkids and just laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh, assuming she remembers it. Any of it. Some of it. I'm sure there's a written report somewhere. Consider all the ways we get taxed. wrote Maryland's Community Gazette in April. When we're born, die, earn income, spend it, own property, sell it, attend entertainment venues, operate vehicles, and pass wealth along after death, among others. Well, Maryland has now added a tax on rain. To reduce stormwater runoff into the Chesapeake Bay, the Environmental Protection Agency assessed the state $14.8 billion, that's with a B, which the state will collect starting in July by taxing impervious surfaces. That's any land area in its 10 largest counties that cannot directly absorb rainwater, such as roofs, driveways, patios, and sidewalks. Isn't that the most asinine thing you've ever heard? I mean, that's just one step away from charging us for the air that we breathe. And maybe I shouldn't have said that out loud. It might give somebody ideas. A worker at a New Jersey warehouse was buried under about 1,500 pounds of pineapple that he was unloading. The man, whose identity was not reported, was not injured, but paramedics took him to a hospital where doctors tested him for internal injuries. The worker, who was 39 years of age, was unloading 40-pound boxes of pineapple from a shipping container when the stack toppled over and buried him. It took firefighters several minutes to remove enough of the boxes to even find the victim. The Occupational Health and Safety Administration is investigating the incident. Now, that's what I call the ultimate Hawaiian punch. And how to make a Craigslist advert stand out? Well, one San Antonio musician decided to let his suave rock and roll credibility rub off on his Nord lead keyboard by posing nude with the instrument for his May 15th Craigslist ad. Potential buyers are still arguing over whether the positioning of the instrument should result in a reduced price listing for the keyboard, currently being advertised at $400 U.S., to compensate for the need to purchase handy wipes and rubbing alcohol to disinfect the purchase. Now, I have actually seen this ad, and all I have to say is, ick. Yeah. Anyway, that guy didn't make the idiot of the day. I would assume the idiot of the day would be whomever decides to spend the $400 to buy the keyboard from this guy on Craigslist. But I digress. But here now is this week's Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
Okay, here's a tip. If you're plotting to kill somebody, try not to pocket dial 911 and have your plans recorded. That's exactly what Scott Simon did after getting into a fight with another man at a Waffle House in the early hours of May the 5th. On a recorded line, Simon could be heard telling someone else that he was going to follow the victim home and kill him. Minutes later, 33-year-old Nicholas Walker was shot and killed while driving his car on Interstate 95 in Oakland Park. "This is a first for me," said Broward Sheriff's Office spokesperson Danny Muscella. "Criminals say crazy things all the time, but I've never seen anyone call a recorded line." Homicide detectives arrested Simon, age 24, of Pompano Beach. He is charged with first-degree murder. While detectives do not believe Simon was the trigger man, he did coordinate the shooting. Detectives are now seeking two other suspects, the person who pulled the trigger and another man. Now, what I want to know is, why, oh why, would someone not check their phone to make sure they weren't butt-dialing when plotting any kind of crime, never mind the capital crime of murder? Well, one reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0197. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0197. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here next time for our show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.